morning we're going to read from Genesis chapter 50, verses 15 through 21. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "Perhaps Joseph will hate us and may actually repay us for all the evil which we did to him." So they sent messengers to Joseph saying, "Before your father died, he commanded saying, thus you shall not say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespasses of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now please forgive the trespasses of the servants of God of your father." And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face. And they said, "Behold, we are your servants now." Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid, for I am in the place of God. But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about, as it is to this day, to save many people alive. Now therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them.
Good morning, everyone. Trust we all had a safe and happy holiday, a break from the routine. It's good to be back before you this morning to continue our study of the book of Genesis. Before we get into that, however, we want to spend just a moment, as we customarily do, giving a preview of what's coming up over the next few weeks. Next week, in fact, the next two lessons are going to be a continuation of this series in the book of Genesis that we've been doing. Next Sunday, The Path to Maturity, is going to be a study of the role of Judah, one of the older sons of Jacob, as the book of Genesis closes out. 2 weeks from today, The Older Shall Serve the Younger, which is a study of the blessings that Jacob gave upon the sons of Joseph and the larger lesson behind that. In 3 weeks from today, it's going to be our annual Christmas sermon, and then the final lesson of the year will close out our study of the book of Genesis based on the last few words of the book of Genesis, a coffin in Egypt. So I hope you'll be available to join us for those lessons coming up. Our lesson today, I've entitled The Price for Forgiveness. It is based on the story of Joseph and what happened to him in Egypt and the reconciliation that he had eventually with his family. Now this graphic that I have on the screen in front of you is a portrait of a sculpture that rests on the grounds of a university in England, and the title of this sculpture is Reconciliation. It was created by a Brazilian sculptor, a woman, Josefina de Vasconcelos, in 1977, upon her reflections of the great World War II and all of the struggles that happened at that time, the great slaughters that took place, and then the great difficulties that followed as nations that previously were at war with one another had to learn how to get along with one another once again, how to reconcile. And this statue that she created is such a compelling piece of work because it captures the sense of pathos, of emotional strain that's involved when two people who have been at odds with one another finally are able to reconcile with one another. The image of this couple, a man and a woman, embracing in a non-sexual way, you can just see the grief that's hanging over this sculpture. In fact, it's such a profound work of art that several castings have been made of this, and they rest in several places around the world that have had a problem with reconciliation. In South Africa, in Northern Ireland, there's a copy of this sculpture that rests at the former site of the Berlin Wall. But in all of this, it's a message of the difficulty that's involved in people reconciling with one another. And I use this graphic, not to give you an opening lesson in art history, that's not the point, but it just captures what today's lesson is all about. In the last two lessons in this series, in the book of Genesis, we have been looking at the horrible way in which Joseph's brothers mistreated him because of the deep envy they allowed to seep into their hearts. They hated him to the point that they were willing to sell him into slavery, and it was just an awful way to treat their little brother. But then, in the following lesson, we looked at the very honorable way in which Joseph responded to his mistreatment. He worked hard. He kept a good attitude as best he could. He served other people. He maintained his integrity in the face of some very strong temptations that came his way. And above all, he never lost his faith in God. He recognized that somehow, some way, God had a purpose in all of this. He had no idea what it was. And we traced all of that out in the previous two lessons. Now, it would be very easy in any other situation or story that has these elements in it to see this story playing out by the two parties being hopelessly at odds with one another, heading off in completely different directions, never seeing each other again until the day they die. And we say that would be the normal way to see this story play out because we've seen it so many times play out, have we not? I have a couple of great aunts, I believe is what they would be called, that lived in the same little town in Oklahoma that earlier in their lives, they had a falling out with one another, and though they lived in the same town, they never spoke to one another until the day they died. I have no idea what the falling out was about. But it's just an illustration of how difficult it is for people who have had this kind of history in their background to overcome that history and come back together and to be reconciled with one another. This story that we're reading about in the book of Genesis, however, does not end that way. These people are, in fact, able to be reconciled, but in a most unusual fashion, and that's going to be the subject of our study this morning. What we're going to do is start out by looking at just the sequence of events that brought these people back together again. And then we'll focus our attention specifically on Joseph and his role in making the reconciliation possible. So just very quickly, we're going to go through chapters 42, 43, 44, and 45. Four quick chapters in about 5 minutes. Obviously, there are a lot of details here that we're not going to be able to spend time on, but hopefully you can get a sense of the trajectory that this story took as it began to play out. It starts, of course, with the famine. We've already been introduced to this famine. That's how Joseph arose to position of power in Egypt. And he is now responsible for taking care of the needs of his people, in fact, the neighboring nations around in the Middle East who are likewise impacted by this famine. Joseph is what you could call the FEMA director, the Federal Emergency Management Agency of Egypt. He's responsible for making sure that this disaster is handled appropriately. 7 years of famine, of good years, followed by 7 years of famine. And Joseph now is responsible for doling out the food, the grain that is going to keep people alive. And Jacob and his family in the land of Canaan are, of course, impacted by this famine along with everybody else. And so he hears there's food in famine. He sends his sons to Egypt. Please go down there and get food that we may not starve. Now, when they face Joseph for the first time, Joseph instantly recognizes who they were. He knew that these were his long-lost brothers. They, on the other hand, did not recognize him, as well we could understand. So much time has transpired. He has grown up. He's matured. It's a completely, totally different context from what they would expect. And so they just do not recognize Joseph as being their long-lost brother. But it's at this point that Joseph does something rather odd. Instead of revealing himself to his brothers, he strings them along for some period of time. Starts out by holding Simeon, one of the older brothers, as a hostage, and he says, I'm going to hold him. I want you brothers to go back to where you came from. And I understand they had told him that they had a younger brother that didn't come with them. That would be Benjamin, Joseph's own full-blooded brother in the flesh. I want you to go back and bring Benjamin back to me. I want to see him. And, of course, the brothers are just clueless. They have no idea why this Egyptian official wants to see their kid brother. And just to make sure they follow through on this, he gives them the grain, but he keeps Simeon as a hostage. So they go back home. They tell Jacob. Jacob just falls to pieces. I've lost Joseph. I've lost Simeon. And you want to take Benjamin away also. Anyway, they finally talk him into, if we want to continue eating, we're going to have to bring Benjamin with us to go back to face this Egyptian official again. And so they did. And when they returned, Joseph sprung a trap on these brothers that implicated Benjamin in the theft of a precious goblet that Joseph owned. And Joseph said, okay, I'm going to have to take him as my slave now, and you guys can take your food and go back home. And at this point, the brothers now are confronted with an awkward choice of having to either go out of their way to try to save Benjamin or go back to their father and say, I'm sorry, Dad, but now you've lost two of your sons. And by the way, they're the two sons of your favorite wife, Rachel, who is also deceased. And it was just an unbelievable predicament that these brothers of his were in. But it was at that point that Joseph finally revealed himself to his family. We'll talk more about the details of how this revelation took place in chapter 45. But suffice it to say, it was just a thunderbolt out of heaven to these brothers that this Egyptian official that they'd been dealing with was in fact Joseph, the one that they had given up for dead long before. And he didn't just reveal himself to them, he in fact made provisions to have Jacob and all these brothers and all their families move from Canaan into the land of Egypt, where there they would be protected and cared for and everything available to them that they needed, land, whatever. So the story has a very happy ending. But we have to recognize where all of this started from. And that was the brothers selling Joseph into slavery in a most despicable fashion. And yet somehow Joseph is able to put all that behind him and to reconcile with his family and to pull everybody back together again. So that leads us then to the real question that we want to focus on this morning. What was Joseph's motive in the way that he played this story out? Why did he not just immediately, when he saw his brothers, just say, hey guys, haven't seen you in a long time. I'm Joseph. Remember me? He didn't do that. He strung them out for a long period of time. And so commentators wrestle with this question, why did Joseph hold his cards so close to his chest as he was working out how to reveal himself to his brothers? Some commentators suggest that Joseph was just as shocked by this as the brothers were, and that he had no idea in his own mind how he was going to handle this. He felt it was unsafe to reveal himself immediately, so what he was doing was trying to buy time to allow himself to sort out his own feelings. But I doubt that that's the case. Because just think about it. Joseph now is second in authority over all the land of Egypt, and it would have been the simplest thing in the world for him, if he's really struggling on how to deal with this, to just eliminate this problem from his life immediately. He could have had these men killed. Just take them off, kill them. Or he could have done to them what they did to him, sell them off into slavery. Or he could have been a nice guy and not gone that harsh route and instead just say, I'm sorry, the shop's closed today. You go back to the land of Canaan empty-handed. As far as I'm concerned, you and your people can just starve. Now, those were the options that were available to Joseph, but of course he didn't do any of that. And the fact that he did not do that is a pretty strong hint that there was not an element of revenge in Joseph's heart. The fact that he could have taken any of those options and he deliberately chose not to tells us that there was something in Joseph's heart that had allowed him to, in some way, put the past behind him. In fact, we know that Joseph had no expectation of ever being reconciled with his family. This was not something he was looking forward to. This was not something that he had planned for. This was just as much a surprise to Joseph as it would eventually be to the brothers. For example, if you look at Joseph earlier in chapter 41, when he was exalted to this great position of power in Egypt, and he was given an Egyptian wife, and he had two sons. And the oldest son he named Manasseh, which means making forgetful. And then this is what Joseph said about the name he gave to this son: God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. As far as Joseph is concerned, the father and the brothers and all the other relatives that are back in Canaan, that's history. That's a part of my painful past, and I am putting that behind me. Now, we don't have this next thing on the graphic, but the second son, Ephraim, was that God has blessed me. He's made me fruitful in this new land in which I live. Name that son Ephraim. But in all of this, it's obvious that Joseph, even though he may have had a reason to be vengeful toward these brothers, he was not. Consider also the fact that as the second in power in the land of Egypt, he had the means, had he so desired, to send back to Canaan to inquire about the nature of his family, at least his father. But he never takes that path. Again, as far as Joseph is concerned, the past is behind him. He has moved on in his life. And this is the way his life is going to continue to play out. He's an Egyptian now. He still believes in the true God, but his life is here, his family is here, his destiny is here. He's an Egyptian. And those people that treated him so badly back in Canaan, they're behind him. So keep that thought in mind as you work your way through this story of how Joseph was eventually reconciled to his brothers. He was not expecting this any more than they were. None of the players in this had any idea how this was going to work itself out. But what I'd like for us to do now is to look at another detail that is woven throughout this story that provides a great deal of insight into what was in Joseph's heart during this period of time. And what we're going to be looking at is the cases in this story where we notice that Joseph wept. He was so overcome with emotion that he began weeping uncontrollably. There are four times in this story that we are told that Joseph wept. So for the next few minutes, let's work our way through this story again, and let's notice these four times that Joseph broke down crying because of the emotion of what he was facing. The first time that we see him weeping is in chapter 42, when the brothers first came to him, and he's standing there before them, and the brothers are there talking among themselves, and they do not know. There's an interpreter between them. They think they're talking to an Egyptian who knows only Egyptian. They're talking in Hebrew among themselves, and the interpreter is interpreting for them. They don't know. Joseph understands everything they're saying in Hebrew. And one of the things that they're talking about is the regrets they have over the way they treated Joseph some 20 years before. And when Joseph hears that, the text says they did not know that Joseph understood them, for he spoke to them through an interpreter, and he turned himself away from them and wept. He wept because he saw something in these brothers he hadn't seen before. And some of the words of regret and concern that they had about what they had done with Joseph was something that touched his heart. The second time that we read about Joseph weeping is in chapter 43. After they have gone back home, they've come back to Egypt, this time with Benjamin, their little brother. The record says that Joseph, when he saw the brother standing there, and there's Benjamin. Now remember, Benjamin is Joseph's only full brother. All the others are half-brothers. But this is his brother through a common mother, a mother who has deceased. And the text says that his heart yearned for his brother. So Joseph made haste and sought somewhere to weep, and he went into his chamber and wept there. Then he washed his face and came out. Now put yourself in the shoes of Joseph. You have a brother. At the last time you saw him, he was probably a preteen. And now he's a young man, probably in his mid to late 20s. And it's the first time you've seen him. And he seems to be doing well. He's thriving. The half-brothers have not killed him or sold him off into slavery like they did you. And this is your connection, your only connection to your long-lost mother. And in fact, a connection to your father. And you can't help but understand the emotional sledgehammer effect that must have had on Joseph. He made haste and sought somewhere to weep and went to a chamber and wept there. Years and years of painful memories were washed out of his system as he made his way to this place to try to have this emotional release from what he was experiencing on this occasion. The third time that we read of Joseph weeping is in chapter 45. And this is on that same return trip now. And again, there are other details here they're not going to go into, but Joseph has set this story up in such a way that the brothers are truly concerned about their fate, what's going to happen to them. But Joseph finally, in verses 1 and 2 of this chapter, we're told, made himself known to his brothers, and he wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard it. And he forced all the Egyptians to leave the room. You all get out of here. This is between me and these people from Canaan. And it was then that Joseph wept aloud, this time in front of his brothers. And then later on, verses 14 and 15, he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brothers and wept over them, and after that, his brothers talked with him. Now, was Joseph a crybaby? Was he one of those guys that just has a hard time holding his emotions in, and he just, you know, would cry at supermarket openings and that sort of thing? I don't think so. I think any one of us who had been in Joseph's shoes, including us men, having gone through something like this, would have had difficulty holding our emotions in check. But you know what we have not read anywhere in any of this? Have you noticed? In none of these things that we have read, you can read the rest of the chapters in here, nowhere does Joseph ever say, "I forgive you." Now let that sink in. Joseph never says anywhere in these chapters up to this point, "I forgive you." Now what does forgiveness mean? The Bible word forgive, both in the Old and New Testaments, means to release from liability. Somebody owes you a debt, and you forgive the debt, meaning you cancel the debt. I declare it no longer valid. You don't owe me anything anymore. Now, why do we use, and we even use that term today, to forgive somebody's debts means you cancel the debt. Why do we use the word forgive in that context? What we're doing is we're saying, you don't owe me anything anymore. I am going to take the loss. I am going to pay the debt. Whatever I'm out because of this, I'm willing to write that off. I'm just going to take it. You don't owe me anything anymore. That's forgiving the debt. Now, that's what we would expect this story to say. But it never says that anywhere, does it not? Think about this. Many years later, Jesus of Nazareth came along, and he taught a lot about forgiveness, did he not? But on one occasion he said, this is Mark 11, verse 25, "Whenever you stand praying, if you have anything against anyone, forgive him, that your Father in heaven may also forgive you your trespasses." Now, let that language soak in for a little bit. Whenever you stand praying, here's the situation. You are praying before God. You have requests that you want to make known to your Heavenly Father. And among those requests is, "God, please be merciful to me. Forgive me. Release me of the liability that I owe you because of the sins and shortcomings and the failures in my life. God, please forgive me." But Jesus says, if you recognize that you have anything against anyone, what does he say do? Forgive him. Now, he didn't say, go to your brother and forgive him. He says that in another context. That's not what he says here. You're standing there praying to God. And in the midst of that prayer, you recognize, somebody's hurt me. Somebody's offended me. I have hard feelings towards somebody over here. Jesus is saying, right then and there, you need to forgive him. You need to release the liability. You need to cancel the debt. This person doesn't owe me anything anymore. And why do I need to do that? Because that's what I'm asking God to do in the middle of that prayer. I want God to forgive me, to release me of the debt. Does God owe me forgiveness? No. By very definition of asking God to forgive us, it's a debt we cannot repay. Now, we're doing this little word study here to set up what we're reading here in the book of Genesis. Long before Jesus spoke the words here that Jesus, long before Jesus spoke these words, Joseph practiced what Jesus spoke. Somewhere in those 20, 22 years that Joseph was in Egypt, before he saw his brothers again, Joseph came to the realization that he could not heal the pain in his own life, in his own heart, until he had forgiven his brothers, released them from the debt they owed him. He had to let it go. And we didn't touch on this in the earlier lesson. We're talking about all the positive factors that we see that made Joseph such a successful man, but we need to add this one to the list. Joseph refused to allow the harm that was done to him by somebody else from dragging him down through the rest of his life. And folks, that's what so many of us have a problem with. People mistreat us. They do things to us that are just not right. There's no excuse for what they did, what they said, how they abused me in some shape, form, or fashion. And instead of doing what Jesus said and forgiving it, we hold on to it. We harbor hard feelings toward that person who has hurt us. And we carry that burden around with us for the rest of our lives. And what a burden it is to carry. Jesus said, let it go. Forgive it. Don't hold anything against that person anymore. And that's apparently what happened here in this case. Somewhere in that history, in those intervening years, Joseph forgave his brothers. And when he saw them again, he was simply acting on a decision that he had made long before. He'd forgiven them. Now, if you're counting, you'll notice we've only covered three of the four times that the record says that Joseph wept. Let's look at the fourth one. This gets us into chapter 50. Now, before we read this, you might want to make a note here. In Genesis chapter 47 and verse 28, we're told that 17 years have passed by Jacob and his family all moved to the land of Egypt when he was 130 years old. He was 147 years old when he died. What we're about to read here happened after Jacob died. So 17 years have passed by. They've moved to Egypt. They've been reconciled. And now, after Jacob dies, here's what happens. The brothers sent messengers to Joseph, saying, "Before your father died, he commanded, saying, 'Thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you.'" Now, right there, commentators almost universally will say, what a crock. If Jacob truly did have that message for Joseph, he would have delivered the message personally to Joseph before he died. For them, this is just made up. It's almost certain that Jacob didn't say anything like this. The brothers were making this story up to try to ease what they feared Joseph would do. "Now please forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father." 17 years after Joseph has forgiven them, what are they doing? They're begging for forgiveness. They know that they did evil. They know they treated Joseph horribly. It's been now, 37 years, at least 37 years, since they sold him into slavery. And they cannot get the guilt out of their mind. Even after Joseph has gone to extraordinary lengths to forgive them and to show them that there's no hard feelings anymore, we're together again as a family, 17 years later, they're still asking for Joseph's forgiveness. So how does Joseph respond? Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Guys, what more can I do? How else can I show you that I have forgiven you? If I wanted to do you harm, to repay you in some way, I could have done it long before now. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, "Behold, we are your servants." Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God?" And folks, doesn't that last line pretty well summarize what forgiveness is all about? I want to be in God's place. I want to be the one who controls whether somebody is forgiven or not. I want other people to grovel in front of me. And Joseph said, "Guys, no, that's not the way we're doing this. Don't be afraid. I am not in the place of God. I'm not going to pretend to be in the place of God." Folks, that's why we have to forgive. I'm not in the place of God. You're not in the place of God. None of us are in the place of God. And when we stumble and fall and mess up and mistreat one another, the least we can do for each other is forgive each other. And quit trying to play God. Joseph recognized that. He wept because these men were still burdened with the guilt despite everything that he had done for them up to that time. You know, too often we treat forgiveness as something like a friendly gesture that we do in response to a minor grievance. Somebody insults us in some way. Well, I'll just let that go. That's not a big deal. And it's easy to do when it's not a big deal, when it's just the little things in life. What these men did to Joseph was not a small matter. This was criminal, what they did to him. And yet Joseph found it in his heart to forgive them. In this story, don't you see, is a demonstration of the price of forgiveness. We have to give up any expectation of the offender ever paying for what they've done. Joseph's brothers never truly paid the price that they owed for what they did to their little brother. But in Joseph's mind, that was okay. That's for God to deal with. And Joseph said, "Guys, I don't care anymore." Now, truly, it helped that Joseph saw in the behavior of these brothers and some of the things that they said, he saw men who had changed. They had grown up. They had come to reflect back on their lives and how they had treated Joseph and recognized that they had done some pretty terrible things. But Joseph was willing to just let it go, just let it drop, and not carry it forward into the future. Joseph's sacrifice brought healing to a dysfunctional family that was broken by selfishness and sin. Look at the relationships in your own life. Are there any of them that are still broken, still dysfunctional, still walls of barriers that are erected between you and others that will not allow a reconciliation? Is it possible that a major factor in these broken relationships is our own unwillingness to pay the price for what other people have done to us? And isn't there a parallel in our relationship with God? Paul writes to the Colossians in chapter 3, "Put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, suffering, bearing with one another, and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do." My friends, let us think long and hard about why we have these problems with other people in our lives. Yes, in many cases, they have hurt us. They've mistreated us in some way, and that's regrettable. But it's not on you to fix that. What you can do is what Paul admonishes here and what Joseph actually did in his story. We can forgive, even as Christ has forgiven us. If you want the forgiveness of God in your life, it's available to you right now today. But part of that forgiveness is going to involve you being willing to forgive others. Let it go. Give it up. Don't burden yourself with this task of trying to be in the place of God regarding what other people have done or done to you in the past. You need God's forgiveness this morning. We encourage you to come forward, and we stand and sing the invitation song.